Chapter 1. Kara. No, no, don't scream. I'm here to help you. Your father sent me. He raised his hand in a non-threatening gesture and smiled at the terrified 19-year-old girl backing away from him. Ian followed her slowly, matching every step with a longer one to close the distance between them. Target located, he said into the transmitter, relaying the information to the others on the team. The kidnapped debutante retreated another 2 steps until her hips hit a table and glass clinked together. Some unseen object fell over with a dull thump. Don't touch me. My name's Ian. We're here to take you home, but you have to trust me. We don't have much time. Do as I say and don't make a sound, okay? Hurry. She didn't take his outstretched hand, so Ian grabbed her elbow, holding it tightly when she immediately tried to bolt. Hey, hey. It's okay. Gunfire erupted outside the mansion, and Kara's eyes widened at the sound, her mouth opening in horror. Kara, a male voice shouted from somewhere in the house. In Ian's ear, the transmitter picked up his brother's mid-battle curse. He got by me. Moving up the stairs. Adrenaline pumped through Ian's veins, but he remained focused on the task. Let's go. Kara tried to pull away again. Kara. The man shouting Kara's name was closing in fast. It was too late to get her out of the bedroom, so Ian shoved Kara into a corner and positioned himself in front of the whimpering girl. One of Kara's captors burst into the room, but the guy wasn't prepared to find Ian already there. The man swung his gun up to fire, but 2 shots ended the forward charge. The man's grip on the semi-automatic held true, and bullets sprayed the wall, window, and Ian's shoulder before the gunman and his weapon fell silent. The aftermath of the short firefight was deafening. Kara's screams ripped through the air as the kidnapper's blood began to pool on the hacienda's tile floor, Ian's boot the dam holding the fluid in place. As he watched, blood dripped from his own gunshot wound into the mass, and the puddle grew larger. The flood quickly surrounded Ian's boots like a wellspring bubbling up from the ground, swept over his feet, thickening and darkening, dragging at his legs. He tried to get out of the coating veil, but it swallowed his calves and thighs, dragged at his chest, snaked around his neck. He lifted his chin, twisted, and grappled for a handhold to escape as it swelled over his head and crashed together like the Red Sea. The tide sucked him down until the last bit of light diminished from view, and he was engulfed, suffocating, in inky depths of hellblack. Ian McGregor opened his eyes with a full-body jerk that rocked the bed beneath him. His heart pulsed in his ears, but not loudly enough to drown out the sound of his breath chugging in and out of his lungs. The air conditioning chilled the sweat on his skin as Kara Winston's rescue from a Mexican stronghold slithered back into the hole of his subconscious. Awake, his claustrophobia was manageable thanks to the mind games he played with himself. But when he slept, his guard lowered, the nightmare took hold, and he woke up sensory deprived and drowning because even with his eyes open, the darkness didn't fade. As a prisoner entombed in Iraq, he'd spent 2 full weeks underground without once letting his captors know how close he'd been to losing his mind. He'd known the guards would open the door eventually. They had to drag him above ground to beat and torture him, so he'd counted down the time until they returned, knowing he'd catch a glimpse of the sun through the canvas and bars above his head, something to ease the hours spent in darkness and hold him over until next time. But that wasn't the case now. Dear God, what did I do to deserve this? He wiped a hand over his face and scrubbed hard, hoping to rid himself of the fear that left him shaking like a puppy. He blinked a few times, desperate for a miracle. Ian rolled himself off the bed and onto his feet. His head spun at the sudden shift of position, and it took him several seconds to orient himself and stay upright. Hands out in front of him, he shuffled his way across the room until he bumped into a chair and felt his way around to the front. Halfway there, a prickle of awareness lifted the little hairs on his neck. Who's there? Me, Duncan said softly. Are you okay? Nothing about this was okay. He hated being the entertainment for the household, every time he dozed off. How long had his brother been standing there? Watching him and listening. I'm good. You want to talk about it? No. What did Duncan want him to say? Fear like his belonged to children who believed in monsters under the bed or ghosts in the attic. He was a soldier, at least he used to be. Thanks to his little side journey into Mexico, His medical discharge was complete and his CO5 shades of tick. Ian leaned his head back against the cushion, but he didn't close his eyes. He couldn't, even though it wouldn't make a difference. He couldn't escape the dark, no matter how long he waited. Blindness was his own very personalized hell. Why this? How about I stay? Keep you company for a while. Lost in the dark, Ian made a game of stringing obscenities together in his head, focusing on adding another and another, getting pretty creative in his anger. He couldn't breathe, and Duncan wanted to stay and chat. Get out. Every soldier knew there were prices to be paid, and that sometimes the dice didn't roll in your favor. This was one of those times. But no way could he have sat back and allowed Duncan to go into Mexican drug country on a kidnap retrieval mission without some American-trained soldier tagging along for backup. Before the night was over, he was the one who had found and hauled the kidnapped 19-year-old away from the site of her 4-week captivity. The mission should have been over then, in and out of Mexico with no one the wiser. He had carried Kara through the jungle for 2 full miles with a bullet in his shoulder. To lose his sight during surgery? After they had made it back to safety. Why? I can hang out for a while, Duncan insisted. Ian stretched out a hand and fumbled to find one of the many empty liquor bottles on the table beside him. He hurtled it to the left of Duncan's voice, his rage growing hotter in response to Duncan's pitying tone. The bottle splintered against the wall and scattered across the tile floor. I said, get out. This doesn't have to be as bad as you're making it. Duncan didn't know about the claustrophobia. No one knew. Smart soldiers showed no weakness. But at that statement, Ian started chuckling. Not as bad as he was making it? Duncan muttered something and left, closing the door to the bedroom with a firm slam. Ian laughed harder, the dam inside him leaking like a sieve until tears wet the corners of his eyes, his stomach muscles ached, and he gasped for breath before wheezing out a few final chuckles. Not as hard as he was making it. God help him, he was in hell, and there was no way out. Only you would inherit a pregnant Great Dane. Emma Wyatt laughed as she filled a couple baskets of peanuts to have at the ready. It was hot out, and while the Shake Shack wasn't that busy at the moment, it would be soon. Tell me about it, she said in response to Tosh's comment. But what can I do? Goalie is such a sweetheart, and Mr. Bowman knew not just anyone would take her. Got that right? Morgan said as she munched on one of the potato chips that came with her sandwich. That dog is bigger than my kitchen. Married right out of high school, Morgan was the only one of the besties with a ring and a couple kids underfoot. She lived in an area called Rose Hill, the high-end section of Stone River, Georgia, boasting houses that were a minimum of 3,500 square feet. Stone River was nestled in the Blue Ridge Mountains far enough north to make it a scenic drive for those wanting to view the foliage. Emma, I hate to tell you this, but that dog? She's big, and she's going to get even bigger when she gets ready to deliver those puppies. Morgan slurped the last of her soda, the noise obnoxious. They'll be here before you know it. She's right, you know, Tasha said from her stool beside Morgan's. You need to begin advertising those pups now. See if you can start a wait list and get people lined up before the big day. Maybe Jolie can design some ads for you. Her flyers for the opening of Cup of Joe's were great. Do you know who the father is? Morgan asked. Emma shrugged and kept working, not letting the chatter keep her from her tasks. I have no idea. It wasn't exactly a planned breeding. It rarely is, unfortunately, Tasha added in her serious veterinarian's voice. But it makes for a great mystery. Morgan snickered. It'll be even more of a mystery if they arrive looking exactly like their mama. The saddest part of this story is that even the dogs getting more love and attention than me, Morgan murmured sourly. Tasha and Emma both sighed in empathy as expected, but neither of them pursued the comment. This wasn't the place to discuss Morgan's troubled marriage. That topic required an unlimited amount of chocolate, privacy, and usually more than a few tissues. Mr. Bowman didn't have any other dogs, so there's no way to tell, Tasha said. Maybe you could advertise them with a Who's Your Daddy campaign. Have some fun with it. Emma groaned. Leave it to her friends to come up with that one. The besties, Morgan, Tasha, Emma, and Jolie, who had yet to show today, had been friends since school. Emma had met Tasha in first grade when she taught Tasha how to tie her shoes. Morgan had come along in third grade when her father had moved the family to Stone River from Ohio for an industrial job, and Jolie was inducted the summer before ninth grade when her very strict parents had stopped homeschooling her and allowed Jolie to move in with her grandmother. 10 years after graduation, they were still friends. The besties were great at sarcasm, moral support, and laughter as needed, snarky comments guaranteed. Emma grabbed a few mugs and aligned the handles the way she liked them for easy reach. She'd discovered when she'd first begun waitressing for her father at the Shake Shack that keeping her sanity meant staying a step ahead of the crowd. With afternoon sessions at Zeller University almost over, the late lunch crowd would come streaming in shortly. "Emma, can I get a root beer?" She turned toward the man making the request and smiled. "Sure, Homer. You want peanuts?" "You know me too well, darling." Emma quickly grabbed a mug and moved to the machine. Once full, she set it aside to fill yet another basket. A regular at the shack and one of the town's best mechanics, Homer had a thing about skimping on peanuts, so she always gave him extra in exchange for the tips he left her. Every little bit helped when it came to saving up for her dream, a large kennel situated within walking distance of the shack and her classroom at the university. Emma delivered the soda and heaping basket of peanuts to the ever-patient Homer, then removed the dishes left two stools down by a different customer. That done, she grabbed the rag at her waist to wipe down the counter, the bell banging against the door barely discernible over the jukebox blaring by the two pool tables in back by the pinball machines. The jukebox had to be turned down. The nonstop noise did nothing to help the headache she couldn't shake. "So," Morgan said, lowering her voice so only they could hear. "Where's Lainey?" "I never see her in here anymore." "She officially quit," Emma informed them. Lainey was hired on full-time as an EMT at the firehouse. "Oh wow. Bet your dad loved losing her." Morgan rattled the ice in her glass and slurped again. Tasha made a sympathetic noise. "Sorry, Em. That's why you've been working so much, huh?"
"Yeah.
But I'm not complaining," she added. "More hours means more money." Her sister's new job also meant their father was now leaning on Emma to take over all of Lainey's responsibilities at the shack, even though Emma also currently ran a small kennel out of her father's garage and had her hands full. Every tip went into a fund for the future, namely independence and her own place. She had to get her own place soon. No way could she continue living at the house. Not when her father had announced his engagement to a local bank manager who planned to move in after the nuptials. Thank goodness they hadn't set a date yet. What 28-year-old woman wanted to be the third wheel to her father's love life? "Careful," Morgan warned, "you're starting to sound like me. Rory's pay cut has seriously dampened my spending. If not for the money I make on baking and decorating cakes, I'd be up the creek without my highlights. Speaking of which, I gotta go. Em, do you need me to drive you home? I've got a little time before my hair appointment. She's always running late anyway." "No, but thank you. Jeannie's taking me home." "I wondered where your shadow was today," Tasha said. "She's on her way, and stop calling her my shadow," Emma ordered. "Jeannie's had a hard time of it since her grandma died. She doesn't have any family and not many friends." "Well, you make up for it, big softy that you are, taking in all the strays," Tasha said. "I love that about you."
"I love it too.
Don't get me wrong. I feel sorry for Jeannie," Morgan said, lowering her voice. "I mean, she certainly doesn't have much going for her looks-wise, and I'm not even sure makeup would help." Emma grabbed a container of glasses and set them into position. "People are more than their looks, you know."
"Of course they are," Morgan said.
"But we live in a society where first impressions matter, even here in the backwoods of Georgia. All I'm saying is that maybe she would have more friends if she'd make an effort. Some days I wonder if she washes her hair.
And those glasses of hers?
Seriously, invest in some contacts."
"Wow," Tasha murmured.
"You get harsh when you're grumpy, Mo."
"Oh please, like you haven't thought the same thing.
Being sweet and helpful isn't everything. She needs one of those heavy-duty as-seen-on-TV makeovers," Morgan said.
Emma finished emptying the crate and set it aside with the other two from earlier. I think people should be accepted for who they are. And it made her angry when people talked about how someone else should change and judged others when they didn't know the person. Morgan would do absolutely anything for any of the besties, but to hear her talk about Jeannie, you would think, well, the worst. Both about poor Jeannie and about Morgan for being so mean. Fact was, the few times Jeannie had been around the besties had been brief, but the younger woman's awkwardness had been tangible, making them all uncomfortable. Jeannie was backward and painfully shy, not to mention socially challenged, characteristics that were apparent given her lack of personable graces. I agree. They should be accepted, Morgan said, but we're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy. All right, you too, Tasha said, her tone firm. Morgan, aren't you going to be late? Em, it's just an observation, right? Morgan said. Right. Emma knew Morgan meant well despite her negativity. Morgan was having a hard time at home, and Emma had to give Morgan allowances for being cynical. Morgan wasn't a mean person. Which made Emma wonder what Rory was saying to Morgan about her appearance. Rory was a super critical guy, and after kids and baking for cash, Morgan had gained a few pounds. Emma couldn't help but think Rory was at the root of Morgan's critical comments. The metal decorations on Morgan's purse scraped against the counter's surface and clinked together as she scooted off her stool. Her heels hit the hardwood floor with a clatter. Your uncle's here, Em, Morgan said. Nice lunch, girls, but I've got to get my hair done and get home. If I don't have dinner on the table when Rory walks through the door, he gets persnickety. See you later, Tasha said around a mouthful of sandwich. Bye, Morgan. Emma gave her friend a goodbye smile and wave. Several seconds passed before Tasha spoke. They're fighting again. Bad. Yeah, I could tell. I wish there was something we could do to help. Morgan's marriage had been rocky the last few years, but recently things had gotten even more antagonistic. The first thing I'd do to help is kick Rory's rear for treating her like his own personal housekeeper, nanny, and cook combined. She supported him all through school, gave up her job because he wanted her to, does everything for the kids, takes care of the house, plus bakes for her spending money, and he doesn't lift a finger and treats her like dirt. Maybe Rory is having trouble at work or something. It doesn't excuse his behavior, but who knows? Emma snagged a couple baskets and washed them down after emptying them of the remains and paper liners. Tasha's sigh revealed her frustration, and she rattled the ice in her glass. I hate to eat and run, but I need to go too. I have to go out to Elmer Pruitt's and check on Barney. Barney was the pet mule of one of the local farmers, and the thought of Tasha caring for the ornery beast kept the besties in stitches. Yeah, ha ha. Laugh it up, Tasha said. You're not the only one with bills. I know. Sorry for laughing. Drive safe, Emma said, swallowing her amusement. Will do. Your uncle is at 16, Tasha added, indicating the table Uncle Bruce had chosen. Looks like he's having a good day today. Give him a hug from me, Kay. Absolutely. Emma grabbed an oversized coffee mug and filled it, adding cream and two sugars the way Uncle Bruce liked. She stirred the coffee too hard, the liquid burning her fingers when it splashed over the rim. There was nothing she could do about Morgan, or Tasha for that matter. Tasha worried and fussed about Morgan's marriage, but Emma knew it only came as a result of Tasha not wanting to focus too heavily on her personal life and the death of her fiancé last year. Talking about Morgan's problems was easier than thinking of what Tasha had almost had but lost. She said a quick prayer for her friends and for Uncle Bruce before turning and trailing her fingers along the edge of the long counter. There was a reason she preferred kenneling to waitressing. Dogs were a lot less complicated than people. 2 hours after watching Ian emerge from a nightmare, Duncan McGregor climbed off the back of his Ducati Desmosedici RRGP replica and stared at the university town of his childhood. The ride down the mountain and south along the interstate to the shack had been fast and harrowing, meant to bring focus and clear his head. It hadn't worked. All Duncan could think about was Ian in the hours of Kara Winston's rescue, how his brother had been the ultimate sailor, a true seal. But when he compared that image to the current, gravel dust billowed up with every step Duncan took across the rear parking lot toward the diner, the particles floating briefly in the sultry August air. Dark purple clouds teased the sky with the hint of rain, even though it had been 12 hot, miserable weeks since a drop had fallen. The blast of air conditioning cooled the sweat on his forehead when Duncan entered the restaurant. He quickly spotted the man he'd come there to meet in the back and made his way toward the booth, wondering what Bruce Dibbs had been doing to put the dark bags under his pale blue eyes. Duncan surveyed the environment on his way to the table. The diner was located only a few blocks from the university, but the clientele was diverse, thanks to the main highway running through town bringing bikers, truckers, tourists, and even the occasional farmer. At present, there were four grizzled bikers parked in a booth talking about this year's bike week in Myrtle Beach, a handful of college-age guys huddled over books in the far corner, a lone woman at the counter talking to the waitress, and a few others who sat by themselves and commented on the race on the single big screen. The waitress unloaded a tray of clean mugs, but smiled in Duncan's direction as he passed by. "Seat yourself. Menus are on the table, and Shirley will be out shortly if you have a food order. What would you like to drink?"
"A cold water and a Coke, thanks."
Given the conversation about to take place, he needed a cool head.
"I'll bring them right over."
Duncan approached the booth with a smile.
"Hey, Doc. Thanks for meeting me."
"It was nice to hear from you, Duncan. It's been a long time."
Doc held out his palm.
"How are you?"
Duncan chose to ignore the tremor he saw and hoped it was just a natural aging process and not the makings of more. His doubts grew when Doc's handshake resembled a cooked noodle. Dibbs had always had a strong grip and a steady stare, only one of which remained.
"Fine. Have you been here long?"
"No. Rose dropped me off before going on to do the grocery shopping, but I come here as often as I can."
"The food's that good?"
A tired smile lifted one corner of his mouth.
"I just like the company."
Duncan followed the older man's gaze and noted Dibbs stared at the waitress. The doc was happily married, and had been for as long as Duncan could remember, making him wonder who the woman was.
"I heard about Ian."
"I'm sorry, son."
The shrink tugged on his ear.
"I take it he isn't doing any better?"
Duncan glanced around again, not wanting to admit the extent of his worries but knowing he had no choice.
"No. That's why I'm here."
Dibbs' expression revealed his sadness at the news, his silver hair sparkling beneath the dim old-fashioned lights above their heads.
"I'm sorry to hear that. Your brother is a good man."
"Look, Doc, I know you're retired and probably enjoying yourself, but will you consider taking Ian on?"
"I'd love to, Duncan, but unfortunately I can't."
That wasn't the response Duncan wanted to hear.
"I'll make it worth your while.
You name it and it's yours.
You and the missus ever think about a condo in Florida?
A nice long cruise.
I'll make it happen."
"Ian needs you, Doc."
He just needed to have a bullet dug out of his shoulder.
He went into surgery able to see, but he woke up blind.
"Can't you give him a few hours a week?"
The old man stared at his hands clasped loosely on the table in front of him.
"I'm sorry, Duncan.
I feel for Ian and for you. I want to say yes, but I can't."
Desperate, Duncan scrambled for ways to sway the old man.
"Is it getting to the house?"
"I'll arrange for a driver to bring you up the mountain, or else we'll bring Ian to you.
You won't have to worry about that. You can even take a room and consider it a working vacation if you like.
Bring Rose.
Neither of you would have to lift a finger. If you'll just talk with Ian and get him to."
"I have cancer," the doc said, interrupting Duncan.
Duncan froze, mouth open to begin another round of promises and offers. A moment passed before he was able to speak.
"I hadn't heard.
I'm sorry."
Lifting the coffee cup to his lips, Doc took a fortifying swallow and nodded. "You've had your hands full since you brought Ian home to recuperate, but it's public knowledge now. Stage 4, inoperable. They've given me 3 to 6 months. I intend to prove them wrong, but I am going to spend every bit of that time with my Rose."
The knot in Duncan's gut grew. He hated what Dibbs and his wife were about to face.
As to Ian,
the retired shrink had been Duncan's one and only hope since Ian wasn't pulling out of his post-surgery spiral. Ian knew the doc, respected the man because Dibbs had unofficially counseled them after their parents' deaths by talking them through their grief over fishing and hiking trips.
If anyone could get through to Ian, Dibs was it. I'm sorry for giving you a hard time. If there's anything I can do, just say it. The older man's searching gaze held a shrewd glint. Actually, there is. Dibs had never asked for anything in all the years Duncan had known him. Anything. Good, because I'm going to hold you to your word. Foregoing Ian's state of mind until another solution could be found, Duncan nodded. What do you need? Not me, Duncan, you. And Ian. I accepted your invitation today because I suspected the reason you wanted to meet. I've been giving it some thought, and I've come up with a solution. Someone I believe can help Ian much more than I could. Duncan leaned forward over the table. Who? Dibs lifted his hand toward the counter at the front of the building. Duncan followed the gesture and spotted the waitress. She was at the fountain machine, her head tilted slightly as she waited for the glass to fill. Duncan assessed her in a second. It didn't take long. One look at her face said she wasn't listed in a database somewhere. Soft was the word that came to mind. About 5'6", she wore jeans and a black and silver Shake Shack t-shirt that hugged her curvy frame. She looked sweet and gentle, her long wavy hair and delicate profile the perfect combo for the old-fashioned diner. That is my niece, Emma. The Shake Shack is owned by my former brother-in-law, Frank Wyatt. Rose's sister, God rest her soul, married Frank and loved him with all her heart. The psychiatrist stopped to clear his throat. Sadness rimmed the old man's eyes as he stared into the depths of his coffee cup. The sight gave Duncan an idea of where the doc was going with the story, and he mentally scrambled to find an out, deciding he'd jump the fence a little too soon with that promise of anything. What happened? A car accident. Lauren was killed instantly and Emma injured. Dr. Dibbs' blue gaze shifted back to Duncan and sharpened. Duncan, I want you to hire Emma to help Ian. Exactly what he hadn't wanted to hear. Doc, you know I meant what I said, right? I'll do anything for you and Rose. I'll get you specialists, hire nurses or domestic help, even send you on the trip of a lifetime. But I can't hire your niece. Why not? Duncan looked at the woman again and shook his head. Ian would eat her alive. Doc, Ian's not himself. This isn't a job for someone as young as her. She's 28, your age or thereabouts if I remember correctly, Doc said. She looked younger. A lot younger, Duncan thought to himself. Fine. Someone as soft as she appears. You're being judgmental, Duncan. Shame on you. Shame on him? Maybe it was the way her hair was pulled back from her face, and how the length hung midway down her back, but he couldn't imagine pitting her against a former Navy SEAL as lethal as Ian. What was Dibs thinking? Doc, it's obvious you love your niece and think a lot of her abilities, but she wouldn't last a day. You're looking at the outside, but you're not seeing her strength. And you gave me your word, Duncan. I'm holding you to it. Doc. Ian's drinking and flying into rages. No, he said with a firm shake of his head. For your sake and Rose's, I'm not hiring your niece. Duncan straightened when he spotted Emma making her way over to them. Emma is exactly what Ian needs, Dibs argued softly. Here's your Coke and a water, she said, setting the glasses on the table. Uncle Bruce, my shift is over, but I'll be around for a few more minutes. Let me know if you need anything else. Emma, can you spare a moment? I'd like you to meet Duncan McGregor. Duncan, my niece, Emma. Nice to meet you, Duncan, she said. Likewise. The entry opened with a jingle of the bells attached to the push bar. Emma. How's my favorite girl? An older man called out. We're celebrating George's paper getting published. Set us up with 8 root beer floats, would you? Sounds like a party, Professor Jackson. I'll be right with you. Turning back to their table, Emma smiled. Patty is just coming on the clock, so I need to help her out. Come back and sit with us for a few minutes when you're done. Duncan and I have been talking about a job opportunity you might be interested in. It pays well, Dibs added with a pointed smile at Duncan. Oh, really? That sounds intriguing. I'm sure I can spare a few minutes while my ride home finishes her dinner. Doc, Duncan warned as she walked away, not wanting to be put on the spot or made to feel bad the man wasn't getting the seriousness of Ian's behavior. His gaze strayed to Emma as she headed back to the bar. Despite her words about needing to lend a hand, she trailed her fingertips along the tables and chairs, hesitating every so often to chat with customers. "You're being stubborn, Duncan." Duncan shrugged. "Like I said, it's a bad idea. If she needs a job, I'll ask around and see what I can do, but I'm pretty out of touch with things here. As far as Ian is concerned, what I really need is another you, Doc. Don't you know another shrink? My brother needs someone to show him life goes on after being blinded," the man said, interrupting Duncan once again. "Duncan, Emma is proof of that very thing." "What do you mean?" For the first time since Duncan had sat down at the booth, he saw Doc's eyes take on their former sparkle. "You didn't even notice, did you?" "Notice what?" Duncan felt like he wasn't getting a joke when Dibbs out and out laughed. "Duncan, there is a reason I'm recommending Emma for the job. She's blind too." Duncan swung his head to the right, searching until he spotted Emma as she repositioned herself behind the counter. No way. How had he missed that? Emma laughed at something one of the newcomers said to her, as she retrieved a tray and began the process of filling the order for the floats. Once that was done, she replenished mugs for those sitting at the long bar and chatted up the customers. She even made a banana split, her fingertips sliding over the varying shapes until she found the right ones, like the way she'd trailed her fingers over the tables and chairs as she'd crossed the floor. To the unknowing observer, the gesture had looked innocent, casual, even playful. But despite the ready smile she wore for her customers, he now noticed other things. No matter how relaxed she seemed, there was an intensity about her, a quiet concentration as she focused on and performed her tasks. Emma maintained contact with the counter or machines at all times, whether with her hands or her body, sliding her hip against the edge while she carried drinks to her customers or tracing her movements by the placement of the items behind the counter. "Blind? If you would prefer to consider it my dying request, so be it," Dibbs said, playing his sympathy card. "But with the perspective of death shadowing my every thought and action these days, I feel I'm seeing more clearly than you at the moment. I'm not only asking on Emma's behalf to spare her the indignity of continuing to perform a job she doesn't particularly enjoy, but also because I want Ian to get the help he needs." "Two birds with one stone and all that," Dibbs said matter-of-factly. "And for the record, Emma knows all about handling herself around drunken men. Frank had his own issues back in the day." "Her father?" Duncan asked, unable to pull his gaze from her. "Yes. Emma was blinded in the accident that killed her mother, and Frank didn't handle Lauren's death or Emma's disability well." "Who would?" Duncan continued to follow Emma's every movement, amazed at the ease with which she worked. He didn't mean to gawk at her, but she was amazing. "How long ago was this?" An older woman appeared from the kitchen and took over as waitress. Emma emerged once more, only this time she called out to someone named Roxy. 14 years, Dib said. "Duncan, Emma can help Ian in ways I would never be able to because she understands. She's been there and experienced it for herself." Watching Emma while listening to the doc's words, Duncan faltered. It was tempting. But as good as she was, he couldn't offer her up to Ian like a sacrifice. "He threw a bottle at me today, Doc. Shattered it against the wall by my head. You really want her to be his next target?" "Ian is scared and striking out, but I've never known him to be the type of man to release his frustration on those who can't handle it. You can take the things he does, and he knows that. Have you considered that maybe after all his years of fighting, what Ian needs to face this new development in his life is a woman's gentleness?" No, he hadn't. But Emma Wyatt also wasn't just any woman. Like it or not, she couldn't see, and her disability added an element of risk to an already explosive situation. His brother would never intentionally hurt a woman, but Ian was consumed in anger. A flare of temper or an accidental swing of his arm could prove disastrous. But what alternative did he have? With the doc unable to counsel Ian, choices were limited. And if Emma could teach Ian the confidence she displayed, maybe it was worth the risk? How many people could run a busy diner blind? Maybe Emma was what Ian needed. I'll take her to meet him. But I won't promise to hire her.
Fair enough, Dib said. But I have no doubt that you will.